stunned silence.
What is this?
A bit of an episode, right?
So it must be doing something, right?
Kind of dance playing this, that's it.
Tell us what you're doing.
I just can't figure it out.
I love the enthusiasm.
Brilliant.
You're tuned to the 15th Station, New Zealand's first Catholic podcast. This is episode 83 for August 15, 2014. That makes it the Feast of the Assumption, which makes it our birthday. 7 years on the air or on the internets. And here we are tonight managing to get there through two roaming Catholics. We have Gavin. How are you, Gavin?
I'm roaming.
You are. You're roaming.
Happy birthday, James. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. And we have the Don. How are you, Don?
I'm all right. Happy birthday.
And to you. So the two of you are in between homes at the moment as you move between cities and whatnot. But I really appreciate you guys jumping online and hoping that the 3G and 4G hangs on for this this special birthday episode. It is a little late. It's a day late. And, you know.
A dollar short.
Dollar short. But 7 years, 83 episodes. It's not a bad innings, is it, Gavin?
Pretty good. I think I've been on 82 of them now that we managed to rope me into this one. I think you've probably been on 80 or 81, James. So.
Something like that. I think Don's, I got a little bit of parental leave and that was about it.
Yeah, I think Don's probably been on probably about half, Don, you reckon? Or maybe a little less than half?
Pass.
Yeah, okay. Maybe Brendan Boyce,
yes,
who is a former member of the show,
yes,
is a man who loves statistics. So maybe I should, we should contact him and ask him if he wants to compile some sort of spreadsheet on people's appearances. I think most of the show notes suggest who the people are that have been on the panel that month. So so maybe I can give Brendan some homework before he starts his next adventure.
Great idea. And speaking of adventures, let's get into this fantastic lineup we have, and then we'll maybe reflect a little bit at the end around 7 years and what we have wrought upon the internet. But this first one is talking about the Pope hanging out in your old stomping ground there, Don. This is from Reuters in South Korea. Pope Francis on Friday commemorated the more than 300 people killed in a ferry disaster in April and called on South Koreans, among Asia's richest people, to beware of the spiritual cancer that often accompanies affluent societies. On the second day of his first trip to Asia, the Pope met with families of victims and some survivors of the tragedy ahead of a mass before about 50,000 people at the World Cup Stadium in the central city of Daejeon. Daejeon? How do you pronounce that, Don?
Daejeon.
Daejeon. I wouldn't have guessed that. Hundreds of trees were decked with yellow ribbons in the city in remembrance of those, mostly school children, who died when the Sewol ferry, structurally defective and heavily overloaded, capsized and sank on a routine journey on April 16. Lee Ho-jin, the father of one of the victims, and who had been preparing to convert, asked the Pope to be baptized into the Catholic Church. Asked the Pope to baptize him, I assume. The Pope said yes, and the pontiff will perform the rite himself in Seoul on Saturday, a spokesman said. At the end of the Mass, Francis prayed for the dead, survivors and relatives of victims of this great national disaster. May this tragic event, which has brought all Koreans together in grief, confirm their commitment to work together in solidarity for the common good, Francis said. Earlier, in the homily of the Mass, the Pope urged listeners to, quote, combat the allure of materialism that stifles authentic spiritual and cultural values and the spirit of unbridled competition which generates selfishness and strife, end quote. He said they should see the faith as an, quote, antidote to the spirit of despair that seems to grow like a cancer in societies which are outwardly affluent yet often experience inner sadness and emptiness, end quote. Rapid economic growth has driven South Korea from the poverty of the aftermath of the 1950-53 Korean War into the ranks of the world's richest nations, but deepened inequalities. Today, nearly half of the country's elderly are still impoverished. Francis has made caring for the poor a central theme of his pontificate. Well, 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 well. So what do we make of this? Don, I've never had the pleasure of going to South Korea. But this is obviously a pretty big deal. 50,000 people getting together for Mass in the World Cup Stadium. And, I mean, that tragic loss of life and that ferry disaster. But some pretty hard-hitting words there from the Pope for some of your countrymen.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, really, developing countries in general, where there really has been established a wealthy elite, and with their great wealth I think in the eyes of the church comes a lot of responsibility, which really, if you look at some of the most vulnerable in some of these developing countries, you look at Brazil, various parts of South America, various parts of Asia, where the income inequality is quite vast. You'd have to say a lot of these wealthy leaders are not really stepping up to their responsibilities.
No, I think that's a fair comment. I mean, Gavin, I think we've spoken before, if not on the podcast, definitely on the blogs, about oftentimes the faith can be more pronounced when there isn't as much materialism to sort of block you from God, yet in countries where affluence is abound, faith can be somewhat shallow. That's what the Pope seems to be saying.
Well, and I don't think it would be hard to agree with the Pope based on what he's saying. If you look at statistics around the world, where religion in general, Christianity more specifically, and Catholicism even more specifically, is particularly strong, are often in countries where there is poverty or income inequality, and I think part of it is we see that people become consumed by objects, obviously. So people are consumed by TVs, by the internet, by retail, and as retail has become a ubiquitous thing in so many countries with seven-day shopping and those sorts of things, they all create distractions that some people are easily distracted by. 83 episodes and I, so it's all of a sudden I can't speak properly. So what he's saying is very true. Those who are long-time listeners, and that will be hopefully many people, will remember that I was pushing for South Korea to be the last host nation of World Youth Day because it's a country that from where a number of people have come to New Zealand and Australia, where I now live, obviously. So I've seen the faith of the people from South Korea, and it's a very deep faith in so many places, and also the story of the faith, which Don may be able to allude to, but I think essentially Korea was evangelized by lay people rather than by priests, which is where it happened almost every other place in the world. So the story of the faith in Korea is very strong. So I think it's great that the Pope has gone there as a chance for the people there to deepen their faith and also to get a chance to engage with the international church in a way that they possibly haven't had the chance to before.
I think it's one of those things, Don, where it must be interesting. I mean, having come from South Korea and then in New Zealand and seeing maybe some of the same challenges in a country like ours, which has some of those similar gaps and the gap between rich and poor only widening over time. I mean, the Pope could very well have been giving this message to us in Eden Park.
Yeah, I think we're probably a little bit better in the Western world at caring for those most vulnerable in our society. Maybe not on the abortion front, but certainly on the social welfare and there's certainly a safety net if you're out of work, if you need a hospital treatment. Whereas in a lot of those countries, there is really no net. If you have cancer, it's either you have a lot of people kind of scrambling around for their friends, trying to get the money for operations and whatnot. Whereas that's probably not so prevalent in the West.
Really? I didn't realise that there's just no welfare state to speak of.
Not really, no.
Well, I think that the Pope has there are some messages there that we can definitely take back, which is usually what happens when the Pope speaks. He has a habit of saying things that become universally applicable. But this one in particular is one for us to reflect on. And speaking of protecting...
Don.
Sorry.
Ruin
my perfectly wonderful segue about... Carry on.
I just need to put in one crappy stat, and that's that Korea has the fourth largest number of saints in the Catholic world. So I'll probably interrupt your segue there, but I thought I'd...
That's a decent stat. That's a decent stat. I'll let you interrupt my segue. My segue was going to be talking about, you know, speaking of protecting the most vulnerable members of society. So I'm going to say the same thing. Speaking of protecting the most vulnerable members of society, the New Zealand Catholic Bishops Conference has urged Catholic voters to vote political candidates or parties based on how they plan to protect the most vulnerable members of the society. This is from NZ Catholic. An election statement released by the NZCBC explained neither the Catholic Church nor the bishops would tell Catholics who to vote for. Instead, they are encouraging voters to question, discuss, debate, pray, be involved, and speak out for the poor and vulnerable among us as you decide how to cast your vote. The bishop said sometimes election concerns are presented as detached from the people they affect. Quote, the issues are someone's reality. We are all challenged as voters to place first in heart and conscience those whose lives are potentially affected by decisions we make as voters, they said. The bishops asked voters to consider how their votes might affect people who are living in poverty, people living with pain, illness, or approaching the end of their lives, unborn children, refugees, asylum seekers or migrants, people without votes, and people in prison. Quote, struggling families with empty cupboards sometimes live only a few streets away from others for whom the provision of food and other basics is no problem. It is particularly concerning when people live in ignorance and even indifference to how their neighbours are faring, they said, as they stressed that our fellow New Zealanders matter. And they do, Gavin, they do matter. This is some good stuff from the NZCBC, wouldn't you say?
Oh, it is. And as you say, it's a nice segue. 83 episodes of segues.
Oh, I'm just so
one
polished.
One of the easy ones.
So polished.
But I don't mean to say this in a flippant way, but I think every 3 years the bishops could largely copy and paste from last time. And that's a good thing in many ways, because it demonstrates that the church is founded on principles that don't change with the whims. But it also means that we could probably find a lot of similarities between this statement and the last one, and the one before that, and the one before that, and the one before that. But
it's almost like it's a recurring theme there, Gavin.
There is. And certainly, I think, under the Francis pontificate, as we've seen this sense from people that, and it was in the first story that you read, James, that, you know, Francis seems to care more about poor people than the last bloke is basically what, without saying that. So at a time when that seems to be the narrative that's carrying on out in the populace, it's another chance for the church to put forward and maybe have it listened to in a different way than it has been in the past, about that idea of care for the poor and care for the vulnerable. And then we'll link in the show notes to the fuller statement that they made, but they work through a series of issues that they think are important, but a lot of them revolve around poor and vulnerable people in various guises. So that's unborn children, it's people with disability, it's people living on at or below the poverty line, and in a range of different other difficult circumstances. So always good for the church to speak out. Pope Francis certainly said in his apostolic exhortation, Evangelii Gaudium, that came out last year, that the church shouldn't just be sitting on the sidelines and watching, it needs to get involved. And again, that was a good reminder for people, that the church shouldn't just be sitting and watching, that even though often the church is told that it probably should be quiet, it's incumbent upon the church and leaders of the church to refuse to listen to that and to speak up and speak the truth.
What did you make of this, Don? Do you think the bishops are onto a good thing here, telling us not telling us who to vote for, but telling us what we should be considering when choosing who to vote for?
Yeah, absolutely. They probably should have ruled out Greens, really. If you look at some they're pretty incompatible with the Catholic faith and their policy in abortion, for example. And I'm sure at some time, I think they've taken her off now, but in the beginnings of the Green policies, that they did have something basically stating that men or people were generally pollutants and didn't really deserve their kind of dominion status over the animals. And I'm all for caring for the world and all that, but I'd say that Green policy is pretty incompatible.
Well, I think I have actually often wondered, has this always been, and Gavin, you're a little bit more the historian among us, has this always been the case? Has the church always tried to be, well, at least in New Zealand, voting terms, neutral?
Oh, I think as long as I've been watching, and I think I think we can look through history and see times when the church has been a little too close to the political process, and bad things have resulted from it. I probably don't need to list examples, but I think we've seen that happen in certain parts of Europe and not so distant centuries. So I think we need to understand that there needs to be this, separation of church and state is a different thing from the church speaking into society. But I think I don't think anybody should tell anybody else how to vote, really. And I think the church and the bishops are part of that. I think people, and this is what I've sought to do, maybe better with some than others, but when people who aren't as engaged in the political process have asked me, who should I vote for? I would say, well, what are issues that matter to you? And I'll try and explain to you what it is that the parties in general stand for on things like education, on tax, on the environment. And, obviously I bring my own prejudices to any discussion that I have. But I think that's what anybody should try to do rather than telling someone who to vote for, whether they're a member of a congregation, whether they're a member of your family, whatever it might be. I think it's an opportunity to try and educate people about the political process and have people make decisions. Now, sometimes I thought, well, if these people aren't paying attention and their vote, is it going to be as well thought out as some others? But I suppose that's the nature of the electoral process, that you don't have to take an IQ test on the way in to determine whether you have the mental capacity to make important decisions like this.
No, well, to be fair, we don't actually ask our politicians to take a test on such either.
Well, no, there'd probably be some interesting results.
I think it is interesting that in an election year, it's a tricky thing to remain neutral. But I think that the church is doing a good job here in saying, look, you'd need to look to the issues, and just in case you're wondering which issues are important, here's a little reminder. And I think that that is a good thing for us to remember, that we are we're very blessed to be able to have the freedom to vote, and to have some level of representation in the governance of our country, and that freedom should not be taken lightly nor exercised without some sort of due care.
Am I going to kill your segue here?
Probably, go on.
Yeah, okay. I was just going to say, probably when we spoke, I don't know if you were building to freedoms and that sort of thing and lack of it.
I was, but carry on.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to make it as obvious that you were stuffing with it this time, but carry on.
Okay. Now, I've probably forgot what I was going to say after that interruption, but in 2008 and 2011 and 2014 now, we've been watching this for the last 3 years. Three elections, rather, through the 15 station lens. And we'll be watching it closely. And I have completely forgotten what I was going to say because I was so concerned about ruining your segue. So get out and vote if you're in New Zealand.
Get out and vote, absolutely. And if you're in Australia...
I disagree. If you don't know the issues and you don't understand the issues, don't vote.
No, so I think the actual starting point there, Don, would be if you don't know the issues, go find out the issues and then go vote.
Yeah, but if you can't be bothered finding out the issues, don't vote.
Yeah, okay, well...
it's a responsibility. And
it is a responsibility, it is. And it's one of those things for me which says that if there shouldn't really be an option if you don't know the issues. I think if you don't know the issues, go find out the issues, figure it out. And that's one of the things I sort of look at this saying, that would be the expectation I'd be putting on, if this was my kids, or what I sort of put on myself. And it can be a bit of a pain, but, no pain, no gain.
Well, and again, I had another thought there that's just gone out of my head again. But I think the idea – no, it's come back to me now, thankfully. I think the idea of compulsory voting is a little bit silly, which exists in Australia, that you are actually compelled to vote. And if you don't vote, you can be fined for not doing so.
Yeah, I thought that was the case in New Zealand as well.
Oh, no.
Oh, really?
No.
Oh, right.
In New Zealand, they get about 70, in the upper 70s or mid 70s,
right,
turnout for the national election. So in Australia, it's in the 90s because it's actually compulsory. I don't think they send out the hit squad to find you, but it's compulsory. And in America, it's not compulsory. And they get maybe 52% or something in a presidential election. So a lot of people don't.
There you go.
Don't get too interested. Don't get we too do at the 15th station.
We do. Because
following
we take
elections since 2007.
That's right. We take freedom seriously. Speaking of freedom seriously, seriously needing some freedom, this is just, I'm going to try and get through this story without my blood pressure putting me into some, you know, catatonic state. But this is from the Catholic News Service. The Vatican called on Muslim leaders to condemn the barbarity and unspeakable criminal acts of Islamic State militants in Iraq, saying a failure to do so would jeopardize the future of interreligious dialogue. Quote, the plight of Christians, Yazidis, and other religious and ethnic communities that are numeric minorities in Iraq demands a clear and courageous stance on the part of religious leaders, especially Muslims, those engaged in interfaith dialogue, and everyone of goodwill, said a statement from the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue released by the Vatican on August the 12th. Quote, all must be unanimous in condemning unequivocally these crimes and must denounce the invocation of religion to justify them, the statement said. Otherwise, what credibility will religions, their followers, and their leaders have? What credibility would remain to the interreligious dialogue patiently pursued in recent years? The same day, Egypt's Grand Mufti, Shaqi Alam, said the Islamic State fighters do not represent Islamic values or Islamic law, reported the Middle East news agency. It also reported that during a meeting with Lebanon's prime minister, the Mufti said that militants' crimes are a shame to Islam and Muslims, and that regional and international cooperation is needed to fight such groups. The Vatican document noted that the majority of Muslim religious and political institutions have opposed the Islamic State's avowed mission of restoring a caliphate, a sovereign Muslim state under Islamic law, to succeed the Ottoman caliphate, abolished after the founding of modern Turkey in 1923. There you go, I got through it. And the reason why this is making my blood boil, Gavin and Don, is because all I have seen over the last week is every time I see a story and I think to myself, okay, I can't get any worse than that. Then I see another story later that day where it's getting worse than that. I mean, it is just atrocious what is going on in this persecution of Christians, well, around the world, but I mean, it's particularly at the moment in the Middle East, Gavin.
It's pretty remarkable, and we all know people who have moved to New Zealand from Iraq in the last 10 or 15 years who we've met since, and they're such lovely people, the ones that I know, and you just think how many people like them who for whatever reason haven't been able to or chose not to leave in recent years are now the people who are suffering, have been suffering on this mountain for so long. I think there's been progress there in terms of people being rescued some. Obviously, it's a terrible situation. But I think that in some ways the tide is turning from those comments that you read. Obviously, in Iraq, the tide hasn't yet turned. But I think the international community, the international Muslim community, is starting to close in on these people and doing what they can to demonstrate that, as far as I'm concerned, these militants, this Islamic State group, is not representing Islam, does not represent Islam, and trying to put pressure on them to change their ways. But just, I mean, we've been seeing it for so long, not quite as concentrated as it has been in this last maybe month or so, with these thousands and thousands of people being basically herded onto this mountain, subjected to 45, 50 degree temperatures day after day. We haven't seen that, but around the world we've seen this Christian persecution going on. And now I think even for a long time, this recent coverage hasn't necessarily looked at that undercurrent of that it is religious persecution. That's a huge part of what's happening. You know, it was seen as this terrible violence was going on and people were being killed and tortured and all sorts of things, but not necessarily that aspect of the story. But in the last few days, basically, I don't think they could ignore it anymore. But it's just been so painful to watch when we think about, you know, whether that could have been those friends of ours from Auckland, yeah, or people, yeah, just like them who are going through this now.
Well, Don, and there's been plenty of stories of just, you know, further atrocities, not just on the mountain, but, you know, through in Mosul and, you know, through Iraq and Syria, you know, and this isn't just to Christians. This is also to people of other faiths. It's the Yazidis, I think it's pronounced. It was the example of a religious minority. And these barbarians, which is what they are, because they're not representative of Islam, but they are just going through and committing these unbelievable atrocities. And I suppose one of the things that is making it even worse is the whole social media and the ability for them to get their message of hate so vividly spread throughout the world that even we're seeing it.
Yeah, I just don't know how in someone's conscience beheading and killing children or selling young women as sex slave and mutilating their genitalia, how any of that as a human being, no matter what your faith or what you believe in or what your political goals or what your ideology is, how that doesn't affect a person's conscience.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's the thing for me that I'm struggling with this so much. Now, I mean, I've seen some commentary on social media in New Zealand and people trying to express solidarity, but I've also seen some, quite frankly, ignorant comments from people. You know, and it's also all mixed up in that you see a lot of international coverage about Israel and Gaza and what's going on at the moment over there, which is just as, you know, just a bit crazy as well. But people trying to pick sides and trying to not pick through the history behind either side, but in fact just, you know, just picking sides. And I kind of look back at all of this and try and sort of lift out and say, at what point, what is misfiring in the collective brains of these people on all sides, where when you hear stories of whether it's bombs, you know, rockets or missiles or whatever else going off in schools or hospitals, or the atrocities, you know, some of the ones you just sort of alluded to there, Don, that that ISIS is committing and that others are committing, and all with God's name being thrown around as the reason or the excuse for it. I mean, Gavin, this is just, it's barbaric. It's I feel like we haven't progressed anything in thousands of years.
There's a sense of that, and at the moment it's the you know, there's obviously a lot of nuance around what happened in the Crusades and those sorts of things, and you know, we've got our own checkered history, but I'd like to think that people should have evolved a bit in the last few hundred years. But this sort of behaviour is just simply unacceptable. But we're saying that some people still don't. And as terrible as it is, we have to remember that it's still, you know, a pretty small number of people who have bought into this just unparalleled hate that exists. And we need to try and rid the world of these people. And there's a lot of talk going on about what can be done, and you know, we can start saying, okay, they should or they shouldn't invade, or they should or shouldn't be doing this, that, or the other thing. But I think we need to understand that somehow, I don't know whether it's going to have to be the West or whether it's going to have to be people from who are fellow Muslims who have to convince these people of what they're doing is just, you know, unfathomable, unconscionable, and has to stop. So we just can't continue to watch this on our TVs for another series of weeks and months and years. Yeah, it's just got to be fixed. And goodness knows how that's going to happen.
I think, well,
you can't tell me that the US can't do anything, because there's, I just looked online on Google, there's like 20,000 of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, the US can, but I mean, as much as, you know, we might say that they shouldn't have done it in, you know, back in 02, 03, what they did, or they should do it now, whatever, you know, the US is a bit on a hiding to nothing.
Yeah.
If they, damned if they do, damned if they don't.
To quote the words of the great Colin Powell, you broke it, you buy it.
Well,
they broke it.
Yeah. I mean, that's another, you know, that history is a part of the reason why There's the reluctance, I guess, and you could look at it the other side and say, you know, as that quote suggests, that because the US had a part to play in, or potentially its involvement is what has led to this vacuum that has now led to this series of massacres. So, yeah, I think you can make the argument either way, but something, you know, the solution's just ridiculously hard.
The one thing that I think is absolutely clear is that everyone needs to be praying, like storming heaven on this one and saying, yep, we absolutely get it, Lord. We appreciate the free will, we really do. But when you're seeing this unbelievable abuse of it, this is a time to really help change minds and hearts and just influence these people who are doing it in your name. And it's just so wrong and so perverted and so disconnected from, I don't care whether you refer to God as God or Allah or Yahweh or whatever you do, this is not what God wants. There is no way that this is what God wants. There is no possible, other than a perversion of theology, there is no way you can think that God created the universe and everything in it and God is love and that God wants us to slaughter each other. There's just no way. And even if you get to a point where you have just wars and all the rest of it, there's still no justification for the slaughtering of innocents. This is not some sort of collateral damage. No. This is a corruption at the heart of what it means to be a human. And this is an example for anyone out there who ever thinks, whenever they're talking to any of the people, go, oh, the evil, blah, blah, blah. The devil's greatest trick was proving, convincing the world he doesn't exist. This is evidence that there is a very, very dark side and a capability for us to do unspeakable evil. And so it's, sorry to sort of bring things down, but I think it's just something where it's so important for all of us to be praying and to be asking God to really, really help, because there does not seem to be a solution purely from human, from a, this is divine intervention needed. Well.
Other fellas definitely. And
there's no doubt.
In some way.
Yeah, absolutely.
You just can't think a human being could do those kind of things without that kind of influence.
No, you've got so much built up that's led to this, and it's going to require a miracle to truly unwind it. Anything other than that is going to be just a band-aid, unfortunately. Let's try and move on from there to the story that's not much better, but it's something along the lines of where this goes when people start to sort of lose their faith because they don't understand what God, who God is and what he actually means. This is from the NZ Catholic. A parish priest in one of the remotest towns of New Zealand has warned of the urbanisation of the Catholic Church and expressed concern at the possibility of losing Catholic rural children to secularism. Father Damien Wynne-Williams, parish priest of the Church of the Blessed Sacrament, told NZ Catholic that children in rural areas are not receiving any Catholic education at all, apart from the adult sermons they may receive in church on Sunday. Quote, I'm really concerned for the paganization of our rural areas. I think increasingly the church in New Zealand is becoming an urban reality. The faith of the country people may be great, but I'd say we've already lost a generation, he said. He said the kids coming in from rural areas have little or almost no knowledge of the church or of the faith. We've lost a generation and now we're dealing with the children of the lost generation, he said. He said up until a few years ago, the pastoral area had a vibrant CCD program, because there were some religious with background in teaching who were free to give their services. None of these women are still available, he said. I was very uncomfortably aware that for those areas without Catholic schools, which is all our outlying parishes, we no longer have much in the way of catechesis for the children. Father Wynne-Williams, together with Susan Rowley, had set up the Bushy School 2 years ago to address this concern. Bushy School is a little attempt at response to that huge, huge need. Bishop Colin Campbell is very proud that we have this project, but it's only a drop in the ocean, he said. Rural New Zealand, Don, going to the pagans, what do you think?
Well, where's the responsibility of the parents in all this? And the homily is still an opportunity for the priests to get some catechesis out there. And this probably applies to rural New Zealand as well as urban New Zealand. There really needs to be a better job of catechesis during that homily time.
True, true. But a catechesis does begin in the home. You're absolutely right there. And that's what I've been told before by our parish priests, plural, that, it's just to make sure that the burden's really clear. it is on the parents. Gavin, what do you make of this, though? I mean, there'd be similar situations, I'd guess, in Australia, which has a really, really big rural, gosh, it's a hard word to say, rural outback.
Yeah, there's it's a pretty big country, Australia. There's a few, there's dioceses the size of France, or there's another diocese the size of France and Germany combined, and some of those things. And, they've got 10 priests in those areas. It's a huge challenge, and as you've both already said, we can't sort of say, okay, parents, you get a pass because there's not a Catholic school around. Obviously, that's where I heard a great saying the other day that the faith is caught in the home, that it's taught in the school if one has access to one, and it's celebrated in the parish, which I thought was a nice little transitional image that one can have. Obviously, trying to get kids into all three of those places is a challenge, and I think that's the big challenge that Father Wynne Williams is mentioning, is that he's, those of sort of our generation, those who are parents now, have lost the faith, and therefore they're not bringing their kids to the parish on the weekend, and they don't live in an area where there is a school, so they're just missing out entirely. So I think it's a big challenge, and I don't envy Father Wynne Williams the task of trying to minister to people in such a huge area where he's in parish ministry. But I think, it's just, I guess, in some ways, him doing whatever he can to try and find those people where there is still that semblance of the faith, and encouraging them and supporting them and getting them to church if they're not going already, to try and reclaim the next generation if that's possible. But I think we're, in some ways, I think his concerns aren't limited to the country, which I think Don's already alluded to, that we're seeing a paganization or a secularization taking place in our cities, maybe not as much, but in big numbers as well.
I mean, there is something to be said for, the reality that what we're doing here, not to put any pressure on us, but the digital ministry, the digital outreach, it's never going to replace the sacraments. I'm not suggesting that it will. But I know that the church has gone through periods of time when access to the Eucharist was, a rare occurrence, maybe an annual occurrence, definitely not a weekly one. And the church still survived and indeed thrived. And you would think that there is an opportunity, Don, for things like the digital media, which don't have the tyranny of distance, that could be used to help with the catechesis of this lost generation.
Yeah, absolutely. Assuming, and I don't know a lot about Australia, assuming rural Australia has access to the internet.
You can ask some questions about the national broadband network if you wanted to, which I think is similar to the work going on in New Zealand, which has run into a problem or two, I think, I can't remember what the ultra-fast broadband, is that what they call it?
Yeah.
The equivalent in Australia has had its own teething problems. It's an ongoing challenge.
Yeah, says a man who's having to call on 3G because he's in Sydney and doesn't have access to the internet.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. I couldn't resist, especially in a few hours when the All Blacks are out going to smash the Wallabies. Here's hoping. Ooh, that would knock on wood.
I have a bad feeling about this.
Yeah.
Don't beat me up tomorrow.
No, I won't. Well, instead of going to our general light story to finish off, I thought, look, it makes sense for us to actually reflect on the fact that it is our seventh birthday, and what a presumptuous little school-aged podcast we are. It's interesting to cast our minds back, Gavin, to that evening in Pompalia Centre, in a relatively, quite frankly, confined space.
The smallest room we could find. We were trying to find... keep the noise in or something, weren't we?
It was trying to get... This is before we had Rendition Studios, fantastic facilities, or even before Skype was as good as it is today. And Gavin and myself and was Brendan on the first podcast?
Brendan and Gabriel, I think.
And Gabriel as well, yes, you're right. And we were trying to find a place which didn't echo cavernously.
Echo.
But when I think about that first podcast and having to explain to you what a podcast was, as I had with blogs for that matter, I think, to come now 7 years later to where we are tonight, it's been quite a journey.
It's been amazing, really, and you're right, you have sort of either led me from in front or pushed me from behind one way or another, and got us to this point. It's pretty remarkable, and you know, we've gone through all those various podcasts and blogs and everything, and just in a few days, unfortunately, you can't join us. But I'm flying the flag for Icon Media and the 15th station at the next Catholic Digital Media Conference. The first Catholic Digital Media Conference, but the second incarnation of a conference of this kind in this part of the world. So pretty exciting that, you know, all of those things, you know, if it wasn't for you getting me into podcasting, if we'd just been in blogs, we probably never would have got onto Father Roderick. Yeah. And you would have, but I probably wouldn't have. And we never would have had him come to New Zealand and then had him come again last year to be involved with Catholic Digital Media Conferences. And so it's a remarkable journey, 7 years.
7 years, and I mean, for those stats counters out there who are interested, if you were to look through, and I mean, the podcast and the network has been through a number of different iterations in that time, and we've had various projects spin up and then go their different ways, which is what happens, which is fine. It's you know, time and a season and all that.
But I think it means we've missed two episodes of the 15th station. In 7 years.
I think it's 7 years, which is pretty good. I mean, a month.
And that's because of, like, January when Hearts of Flame, which people have probably heard us speak about before, have basically meant there was virtually nobody around to do anything.
That's true.
I'm almost as proud of that as anything that we've been.
The consistency.
Yeah.
It's been there's been plenty going on in those 7 years, and I think that, you know, it's a true testament. And the CDMC, I am really. Just upset that I won't be able to make it across the ditch to see to talk to Greg and Jennifer coming all the way down. They are actually going to come across to New Zealand, so that'll be fantastic to have.
You'll have to create some content when you're with them, and
we'll chuck them up on
the Facebooks.
On the Facebooks, but that'll be great. And CDMC for people to sort of follow, it'll be all happening on Twitter, and you'll be able to sort of keep tuned in on that.
Yeah, hashtag CDMC will be the place to follow. So, it's on the 19th and 20th of August. So that'll be the 18th and 19th for those in the US, which obviously we know that a big chunk of our listeners are over there. So if you have a look on cdmcaustralia.com, and you can look at the program times, and maybe you can, whatever part of the world you're in, you can see if there's a way to try and follow it live on Twitter. So there's a lot of people last year. We had a lot of people who, some of whom had never really been involved with Twitter before, starting to learn how to use it. So there was a pretty vibrant Twitter. We weren't quite trending in Melbourne last year, but hopefully we'll have a lot more people. So we're expecting about 109 people, I think, over the two
wow,
days.
That's fantastic.
So it's a pretty great little turnout. So yes, hashtag CDMC or follow at CDMC Australia. It's the Twitter handle, and yeah, it'll be a great couple of days. So very exciting.
Brilliant. And Don, thank you very much for making the time to be with us on the podcast over the years, not just tonight. It's always good to get your take on things.
Yeah, well, come on. I only wish that Brendan was here because he could have sung Happy Birthday in Latin.
He could have. We were going to hopefully get Lucy on, but she's unfortunately caught in traffic in Thailand, so we'll let her off. We wish all of our hosts and guests, hang on, wait a minute, I forget all the mix, the host versus the guest, but all of our guests over the 7 years who have
I was going to start trying to list them all, but I forget.
We'd forget someone.
Yeah, we'd forget one.
If you want to go back and listen through the archives, which we, you know, it'll be good for a laugh, I think in the show notes we'll actually link back to our first episode, and you'll see how far we've come in terms of quality.
Matchbox 20 song.
Yeah, brilliant.
Let's see how far we've come.
If you want to go to www.station15.co.nz, that's the website where you can listen to any other back catalogue of 15th Station episodes or any of the other various shows that we've done or projects that we've run over the years. If you want to drop us a line, we'd always love to hear from you. Love to hear your birthday wishes or your favourite memories over the 7 years. You can reach us at podcast@station15.co.nz. We're on Twitter at twitter.com/station15 and facebook.com/station15. So really love to hear from you all there. And for the stats, I said for the stats and didn't give the stats, 88,000 downloads. That's just over 88,000 downloads of all time. since we've been up and running. So for a little old podcast down here in New Zealand, with only 4.5 million people, that's not a bad innings. So thank you very much, Gavin, for all your work.
Thanks for your hosting. Without the host, we'd be nowhere.
Oh, I don't know about that. But I really appreciate it, mate. It's always a real highlight, I think, us getting the chance to catch up. And thank you to you. I've already thanked you, Don. Thank you again, Don. Thanks to all our listeners. Thanks to everyone who's ever written in. Thanks to all those who pray for us, because we know there's a number of you who do that.
And thanks to God.
I was just about to say, and thanks to the big fella. Thanks to God, and we do appreciate and just feel so blessed to be able to have the opportunity, to be able to have the freedom to be able to talk about what we have, to ramble on like I have over these 7 years. It's a true blessing, and we just give real, you know, thanks and glory to God for it. We just hope that wherever you are listening to this, that you're in a great place, and that you're covered with God's blessings. And we hope to be, doing it for another 7 years. Hey, let's just put that out there right here, right now. See what happens in where the technology will be in 7 years. We'll be able to cast back to this point.
Holograms,
you reckon? It's always the holograms, isn't it? Always the holograms.
Well, we've all got faces for radio.
That's very true. It's very true.
Or maybe they can what's the hologram equivalent of Photoshop?
Yeah, some sort of like augmentation, something, just make it look a bit of a filter over the top of it, you reckon?
Yeah.
Good call. Good call. Well, so thank you, Don. Thank you, Gavin. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, God. And until next time, everyone, happy birthday. Take care. God bless.
This production is affiliated with SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.